Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2775. That's 2775. Tonight we're supposed to have Dr. Lena G. Clark on from Alpharetta, Georgia. And she is a domestic violence survivor, coach, and author. So we are sitting here. I have with me Deborah Hunt, and she's going to be co-hosting with me tonight. And so we are waiting for the doctor to show up, and hopefully she will. So anyway, I'm going to read the mission statement and get that out of the way and talk a little bit about NASCA, too, because I want people to hear a little bit about NASCA, all right? Anyway, what's here is not. We really do so much more than this. It says here, we have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two different ways. I see a telephone number. That's Bill. Okay. That's number one. Number two, offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse. And information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I always talk about prevention, and I always emphasize that because I honestly believe with the life that we all, many of us on NASCA have led, if you know, society would become more involved, and if everybody was a mandated reporter, I really, really believe that it would help with that dent that I like to keep talking about in the statistics. We cannot stop child abuse. It's been around since the beginning of time, and it's going to be around long after I'm gone. I hope that's a long time from now. But anyway, the point is this. You know, what we have to do is become more aware, well, a lot of us are aware, but then become proactive. Right here on NASCA, we do have the tools to teach people how to become proactive with, reporting child abuse, also realizing that a child is being abused. There's all kinds of things to talk about with child abuse and with domestic violence. I mean, Deborah and I could both write a book on it, no problem. I want to write another book, but it's going to be on ghosts. I think so. I believe in them too. But that's the way it is, absolutely. And on number one, educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Well, a lot more people are talking about this. They are. They're talking about it. But they don't do anything. See, that's the problem. If we could all as a people band together, okay, get over our fears, okay, like retaliation is usually one of the things, or humiliation if it's in the family, okay. If we could just, look beyond our own nose, because you can make phone calls to different organizations that are hotline services like 1-800-4-A-CHILD, okay, that's one that I use all the time. In fact, our cards have that on there, 1-800-4-A-CHILD. And I've called them at 2 o'clock in the morning. I know they're legit. I know they're there, and I'm going to get an answer, okay? So if we would all at least do just that, okay, you could be helping to save a child's life. You could be a hero to a child, okay? We don't have enough heroes, but you could be a hero, okay, by helping to save a child's life. Okay, I see that Bill is here, and I will bring him on. Hello, Bill. How are you?
I'm okay, ladies. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I guess the doctor's not going to call in. She's late. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, that doesn't matter. I always have a lot of stuff here to talk about. And, you know, like we've been through domestic violence so much, Deborah and I. So, I mean, we can certainly talk about that. But it also has some stats on it, and they're updated stats. So, you know, what I say here is what I've read. I get my information a lot of times off of our own website, which is naasca.org. That's nasca.org. And then also, too, I just type things into the browser, and all different kinds of things pop up, okay? You can get all kinds of information. You can get it from hospitals, the ER rooms, and I go into the ER rooms and ask questions anyway. They know who I am around here, so they let me have a little bit of information. And quite frankly, domestic violence is horrific right now. I was hoping it would calm down a little bit because, you know, at least, you know, you can go places a little bit more, at least in some states. New Jersey, of course, is always lagging behind. It's still trying to scare people and all this other stuff. So, you know, the point is, of course, there have been many people who have died from COVID. I have lost a friend from COVID. And she was one of the Fab Five, as I called us, when we were singing in New York. We all kept in touch with each other over the years. Not every day, but throughout the years. And unfortunately, she passed away. And then I have friends that I have very close near to me that had gotten it, and one almost passed away. So, I mean, it was enough to make me shut my mouth and go get some shots. That's all I'll say, okay? I don't know. That's all I can tell you. So, but anyway, with the domestic violence, there's millions of ER visits are related to physical abuse right now. And 1 in 10 to 15, children are more likely to be exposed to violent crimes. And with the intimate partner, oh, yeah. You know, that's like the stepfather or the boyfriend, and certainly the father, too. But it's also with, you know, the intimate partner thing is what they're referring to. And there's approximately 1 in 10 American children saw family members assault another family member. And I have a question mark next to that because I know that since I wrote this one, it's gone up. And that's because of all the stress that we're under right now. And I don't know how long that's going to last. None of us do, okay? Mm-hmm. Not even the best scientists. Who the heck knows? What do they know? I don't think they know either. So, you know, we have all these things. And then there are a lot of jobs coming back, you know, at much higher prices. You know, you go at the $15 an hour. Hey. Some of those jobs only paid $8 an hour, you know, some years ago. But you see, that causes problem for the employer. He can't afford to pay his employees, so he lays people off. So you have families that are struggling to keep food on the table, and all the things that go along with it, you know. And so right now, we're having a very bad thing with the domestic violence, very bad.
Mm-hmm.
And children are witnessing it, and we know that because the studies have shown this, that even if you just witness it, and I don't mean just because it's terrifying for a child to witness mommy and daddy trying to kill each other or whatever, you know, that it's the same thing as being in the front line as a soldier. The trauma, they have studies and they have proven that the trauma is equal. It's very much the same.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because when you're out in the front lines and you're put in a position where you're going to be killed or get killed, whatever, You have to make decisions. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have time to make decisions. You're trained, you know, as a soldier to shoot that gun and say a prayer, I guess. I don't know. And with children, when they see their mother and fathers that are, you know, abusing each other horribly and horrifically, they're standing there just as frozen, maybe as a soldier, just as frightened for sure. So it's a terrible thing that the country and other places are going through with all the domestic violence. So children are more likely to be exposed to violent crimes, and that, again, is with the intimate partners. And, more than at least 50 to 60%, now it's gone up, 50 to 60% had been exposed to family violence during their life. Now, that's a study that is not just now, it's going up, period, before the COVID. So domestic violence is something that scars a child. I can honestly say that. And I'll just put a little bit here, and then Deborah can get in there. Bill, I don't believe, saw any domestic violence. He was fortunate that way. But we who have seen domestic violence, we love our parents, or we try to love our parents, whatever the case might be. But to see them fight like that, you know, is something that scares the hell out of a kid. Because I remember seeing knives flying. We had guns. I grew up with on the other side. They were hunters. They were hunters, but they didn't touch the guns. They would throw knives, and they would, of course, break vases and smash, you know, plates and then, of course, there was a lot of physical, you know, things going on. I saw my mother get punched in the eyes. I don't know how many times, and she would tell people, "Oh, I walked into a door. I'm so clumsy." Right? How many times can you walk into a door? Now, come on now.
Somebody would believe me. I really did.
Well, a door? I mean, I would have thought it was something a little bit better than that. But anyway, I mean, you know, it was always something, okay? And always afraid, maybe, okay? And terrified, maybe even, to tell on their partner. Because so often the abuser, whether it be male or female, you know, they say, "Look, you know, if you tell on me, I'm going to damage you even more. Or maybe I'll kill the dog." It's the same thing like with sexual abuse. Or I'll kill the cat. You know, whatever the case might be. Or I might even kill you, all right? So they put us in the same position. Go ahead, Deborah.
Well, the actual meaning of domestic violence is any abusive, violent, coercive, forceful, or threatening act or word inflicted on one member of a family or of the household to another, and that constitutes domestic violence. So it's a vast thing. It's not a husband to a wife, which is sometimes called intimate violence, but it's still in the pool of domestic violence. But it's anything that is coercive and forceful or threatening. And unfortunately, you know, some people like me have more than one instance of that. It's just not just one or the other. It's the cumulative of it all. So, but to say domestic violence, a lot of people don't understand what domestic violence exactly constitutes. They think it's if somebody hits me, that's domestic violence. That's not necessarily all it entails. It's just the physical.
But no one is supposed to hit you. You see, I noticed on Facebook the other day, they were talking about spanking. And boy, I really got into it. And then I realized it was spanking that could turn even to a consensual spanking. Well, that would be with adults. If they want to do that silly stuff, I'm not going to go there. But, you know, spanking with children, that is a no-no. Children are not stupid. And I put that in there. I mean, we're talking about children. You know, I'm not talking about a toddler. There's ways to handle a toddler. That's where timeout comes in and so forth. And that can even last, you know, up until they're about 5, 6, 7, whatever. And you'd never put them in a room where their toys are because then that's not punishment. They can sit there and play, you know. So you put them in a room you know, like the laundry room. Oh, that'll be fun, right? There's nothing to do.
Right.
You know, so, you know, you there's ways of dealing with children who need to be, you know, reprimanded without hitting them or spanking them. Because violence does breed violence. That's what it does. These kids that are out on the street that, you know, get into terrible fights or end up, maybe they have gotten hold of a gun, they shoot someone or they're stabbing someone, whatever the situation might be. You know, they, if you look into the home life of those children, I'm sure that, I mean, I've been told that it's almost always, so I'm just going to say I'm sure that it'd be like approximately 90%, you know, or 85% or 80% of those kids came from very volatile backgrounds. And that's why they yes. themselves become so volatile out on the street. And quite frankly, what we're teaching our children today is not proper because they think they can go looting, they can do this, they can do that. And they have no respect for the police. They have no respect for adults. They have no respect for anything. And they actually don't have any respect for themselves either, okay?
Yeah.
So this is what we've turned into, and it's a very bad thing. But I can tell you this, that when you come from trauma, like we have come from trauma, where we've watched our parents, this is where it starts, in the home. And we don't know how to choose partners. We don't know how to do anything right, you know, when it comes to things like that, because we fall into the mindset, if you will. A lot of times we are in panic mode. A lot of times we're thinking, geez, I better go hide or maybe I'm going to get hit, okay? And there's a large percentage of, they always say the male, but it can be a female, too. It can be the mother or the father, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. That even though it may start out with their spouse, then, you know, it's only a matter of time with many, many, many people where the children then becomes the victims, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is what we're seeing a lot more of, and this is what the ER room is seeing. They're not seeing... I'm not saying they don't take the kid, their child, if they break their arm or something, you know, to the emergency room, or they'll have a somebody else take them because they're the guilty party, right? So they probably don't want to take them. But what the emergency room is seeing a lot of now is children who are taken in and they have head injuries and their brain is bleeding. So we're starting to lose even more children. The last I was told, it was between 5 and 7 a day. But now, because the stress level and because there's so many angry people who can't control their anger, that number, they're sure that the next studies are going to show that it's higher than that. And that's upsetting.
Right.
Do the math. Hey, I'm not good at math. You do the math. You know, so there's nine kids a day, times 52. Bill, quick, what is it?
9 times 52?
Yeah, go ahead, hurry up.
It's 9 years. 9 years. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying 9 children dying a day. Times 50, times, all right, okay, times 365 days. We'll do it that way. I was going to say weeks, but 365 days a year.
I'd have to use a calculator. I can't do it in my head.
No, neither can I. Neither can she. Oh, well, okay. So you, people out there who are good in math, that, they already have the answer, and that is disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm glad we're talking about it, though, Carol. I'm glad we're talking about that, though, because, of course, we know this month is National Domestic Violence Month, and that's just so we could get on here and talk about it. And before we go any further, I just wanted to put out there for anybody listening that the National Domestic Violence Hotline, and it is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and that's what brought it to my head because Carol's talking about 365 days. But that phone number is 800.
It's 3,285, Carol.
Thank
wow,
you. Okay. Now that is horrific. Okay, that's horrific.
Terrible.
We've got John on the line. Hello,
Hello
John.
Everyone.
How are you? Happy
I'm
your
great.
Birthday
you
today.
All? Yes,
it's
it
your
is.
Birthday
Thank
today.
You.
Happy birthday.
Yes, I've had a wonderful
happy
day.
Birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Hey. Happy birthday, dear John. Happy birthday to you and many more.
Oh,
I hope so, baby.
Thank you. That was very good. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Well, mommy's a singer. I told you this. I used to sing in New York, and I had a good time. Yes,
oh, really?
I did.
Oh,
yes,
awesome.
I did.
Yes, yeah,
but anyway,
I just got back from Lafitte, so I'm interested. I just want to join in and listen now.
Okay. Well, we're talking about domestic violence, and
okay.
Dr. Lena Clark was supposed to be on tonight, and
right.
she's not here, and she was going to speak about domestic violence. She has a PhD
okay.
uh-huh. and all kinds of stuff, but she's not
right.
here. But you know what?
Oh,
this
okay.
is what I always say. This is what I always say, John. Who better, and you've heard me say this, who better to teach many times than the survivor?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, we walked the walk so we can talk the talk, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This lady that was going to be on tonight, she too is a survivor, though. But many times we will have people that come on the show who are not,
mm-hmm.
you know, survivors, and that's okay because
yeah.
they've gone to school, they've learned about it, and all this other stuff. But what we can always
mm-hmm.
do is... for lack of better wording, we can put the icing on the cake. In other words, what she doesn't understand, we can finish off because we
Absolutely.
Did walk that walk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
I tell you, I really had a good time with Dr. Romo last night. What an interesting guy, you know.
Yes, he was.
Yes,
God,
he is.
Everything he does is just amazing to me, you know, all the avenues he's trying to create, you know. And that's what
mm-hmm.
we need in this world, you know, the people just like him. And I'm going to help
him. Well, that's it.
He's got some good stuff going, and I want to get involved a little bit with him and see what he's all about and continue his journey and help him with that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's very, very knowledgeable. He's very
yeah.
calm. I like that.
Yeah.
He's a very calm
oh,
man.
Yes,
I've been on his show a couple of times. Yeah. I went on
uh-huh.
just for the heck of it. And,
yeah.
And he's very, just very level-headed. He really is.
Yeah,
very
that's
level-headed
his thing.
Person.
He's very comfortable in the way that he presents himself to people, you know. And it looks like, you know, certain people don't have that demeanor. And
mm-hmm.
I can tell that he's that experienced where he can deal with about any type of person, you know, and know how to do it positively. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I agree with that.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. I might go on the show again once in a while on Thursday night because I do like to. Well, we had quite
right.
a conversation, he and I, one night that I went on. And he's just a good guy. Now, getting
yeah.
back to violence.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, Carol, I did want to get back out there because I was cut off. The National Domestic Violence Hotline is
mm-hmm.
800-799-7233, and they also have their website at thehotline.org. And it's also
right.
set up, and what's really interesting about this website is it's also set up if you believe you're being monitored. So let's say you're in a domestic violence situation and you're Googling it and you're onto
uh-huh.
that website, it has an emergency escape to where you will not be traced. There's a little red X up in the corner, and it tells you if you feel like you're being traced or anything, click that button, and your history will be erased from this site, which I think is really awesome because a lot of people are afraid to even get into their website because
yeah.
if somebody is that bad, they're going to be kind of like stalking what they're going through on the internet. So I think that is absolutely awesome, and it literally
mm-hmm.
says
leave
awesome. This site safely. So
yeah,
I want
Definitely.
To encourage if anybody's going through that, feel safe that you can go to that website. It says you don't even have to click the X, hit the escape button
mm-hmm.
as soon as you feel that you're in trouble, and it erases everything. So That's good,
Deborah.
So cool.
I heard of that. They were doing studies because, you see, okay, I'm always on I'm always looking things up. And I have a lot of knowledge from what I was taught, but now we have new things, okay, newfangled things that I don't understand. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to learn. I want to learn. So I'm constantly doing research on things. Yes, they were talking about that about a year and a half ago, okay, making it so that people could, you know, go on the computer and feel free. But it showed a way that you could protect yourself, for God's sake. That's what they're talking about. And so it's come through, and that's good. I'm glad. You know, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So with the children, though.
So,
okay, let's get back to that, okay?
Okay.
So
you're on children with domestic violence right now?
I'm doing both, yes.
And
there's a reason for that, because of what was put on the Facebook, our Facebook, mm-hmm. the other night, on the spanking. And I did get a lot of responses from that, but it also said about consensual spanking. Well, let me tell you something. I think what that person was trying to get across, I won't say his name, but was that when there's consensual spanking, then the child is put also into that, okay? All right, you know, I mean, it's not a good thing,
uh-huh.
okay? Spanking is not a good thing. It can become a sexual thing, all right? That's what they're referring to, too, as well.
Yeah.
But I just want to get this across here because it's important. The latest studies from the Children Expo Whatever Nation Institute of Justice, can't read my handwriting, no. It says children can experience both short- or long-term cognitive behavioral and emotional effects as a result from witnessing domestic abuse, okay? Now, who would think that from witnessing, domestic abuse, that children could actually have emotional effects as a result and it being cognitive and behavioral, okay? Well, the behavioral I can see, because when a child, I was 4 years old when I started witnessing that, when a child sees all of that horror, because it turns into a horror picture to them, you know, it's like they freeze. You have either flee.
Yep.
I was frozen. I was like a statue. I couldn't move. And I saw that many, many, many times. They didn't know that I was watching until the very end, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's because my father was going to hit my mother over the head, John. You know those heavy black skillets. I love to use them. They're very good.
Uh-huh.
You know how heavy they are.
Yeah.
And when you're a little kid, you don't play with that skillet because it's not fun, all right? So
yeah,
that's cast iron.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. And so that wasn't one that I would play with. So when he picked that up, my father, to hit my mother over the head with that, I knew that if he hit her with that, there'd be no more mommy, because my silly brother and I would talk about death, and he showed me what death was, because my father was always saying he was going to kill her, okay? I'd watch this. He would be under his covers upstairs. He was 5 years older than me, just about 5 years older, and he had gotten hit by my father a couple times, so that put the fear in him. With me, I was never touched until the night that I screamed with that frying pan. And then he stormed down the hallway, picked me up. He didn't hit me, but he smashed my back into the staircase, okay? And I felt every single bone in my body. And then he dropped me like a rag doll. And then he left the house. And, you know, in the city urban areas, they have glass doors. A lot of them have that big piece of pane glass, like. It just shattered all over the floor, and I was like huddling there trying not to get hit, okay? Now, this is what happens, okay, to children, you know, that come from a domestic violence background. They see it, they live it, and yes, I can well believe that they would have behavioral problems. Maybe they become aggressive in school, as other articles I've read said. A lot of times they say that they have ADHD. Well, that's not always the truth. If they went inside of the household,
mm-hmm.
if they went inside the household and saw what was going on, then they'd understand why the child is having behavioral problems. And then with the cognitive, they can't learn and stuff like that. They can't think. I couldn't concentrate half the time because I knew what I was going to go home to, okay? I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just from witnessing domestic violence. So the stats are going way, way up with domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And because of the country that we were in, the world, not just our country, it's all over the place, because of things that are happening, okay? And so it's just a terrible, terrible study. And I was speaking to a man that we're going to have on our show today, and he's a coach of all different kinds, and also, too, with the athletics and so forth, Matt. His name is Matt. He's going to be on, I think, the 3rd, Bill. I sent you an email, November 3rd. But anyway, he knows all about this stuff and has worked with a lot of people and does all kinds of speaking engagements and everything. Very, very, very nice guy. And I'm so happy that I was able to, have him call me back. But we were talking about bullying.
I should get along real well with him then. If he's a coach, I'm going to get along with him real well.
Right.
And he's an author, too. Yeah. He's also an author, okay? And we had a really nice conversation. But he speaks mostly about bullying. And bullying can, happen. I'm not going to give away his story now because I want him to tell the story. But he works a lot. I'm going to leave it at that. He works a lot with bullying, okay? So anyway, he'll be on very shortly. And that will be a very interesting show. But, you see, he and I did speak, and I can say this to anyone. When a child is bullied at home or when they're bullied at school, that too affects their behavior. Many times they become very introverted and very frightened children, very quiet children, children who can't concentrate. Children, that are just, there's all kinds of bullying. There's sexual bullying, and then there is also, too, the typical that you would think of in school that kids do go through with that type of bullying situation. And what it does to a child, if it isn't stopped, they, too, have many, many problems. Not just watching what happens at home with mommy and daddy. Say there's nothing wrong with mommy and daddy. They're having their problems at school. That, too, is a very complex thing for children. That leaves its scars. It leaves scars.
Yes, it does.
I told him how I got out of my bullying situation, and I promised him I would never say it on air, so I won't. But I will tell you this. It worked. Okay? That's all I'm going to say. But
like you're saying, a lot of that is learned behavior. That's why a lot of children do that in school, because that is learned behavior. They learned that from watching it in their own home. And they think that's normal. And that's really sad that a lot of these children really believe in their brains, because their brains aren't developed. They're just developing. And that's what they think normal is.
That's exactly right. And we were talking also, too, in fact, I've done studies on the ACE study. At times, we do speak about the ACE study. The only thing that didn't happen in my family was no one went to jail. So instead of being a 10, I was a 9. And they say, and I read this also, but if you're over a 4, you're going to have all kinds of problems, all right, in your life. So I suggest people look up the ACE study, A-C-E. And if you're thinking about going, say you have a bad temper, and if you're thinking about maybe I do need help, go to the ACE study and see yourself in there, because you're going to be in there just like I was in there. I had a terrible temper, and that's how I got out of things, was my temper. But it also kept me tough, so I don't care that I had a bad temper. I don't know. But the point is, it's good to heal. You need to get help, because when you're a child at home watching all of these things that happen right in front of you, and you want mommy and daddy to love themselves and each other and to love you too and instead they're acting like as they are, then you're going to develop problems. And it is going to go into your childhood and very well can easily go into your adulthood if you don't get the help that you need. Okay? It affects your brain. The trauma can cause lasting changes in areas of the brain. Okay? They deal with stress. And it affects the different parts of the brain, the cortex and other parts. So, you see, these aren't little things.
Which is brain damage, right?
It's brain damage, yes.
That's brain damage, mm-hmm. yes.
Yeah.
And I did have that. And one thing I want to say, Carol, is and taking that even in more extensively. Now, everybody, well, not everybody. I don't know if John knows my story, but, you know, going through all, seeing the abuse that my father did with my mother or hearing it and experiencing the abuse my mother and father put me through led me into relationships that were exactly like that. I ended up marrying a man who strangled me to death almost. Yep. If it wasn't for my friend being on the phone, I would be dead today. And it was horrible. But I went into that, and when I started going to get help and therapy, they were saying, well, you picked a situation that, you know, you were used to. I didn't even know it. So, and they said that it was because my brain developed that way. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm brain damaged. But it truly did affect me because I learned that, what is the word? I learned just that process when I was very, very little. And mine did start around the same age, at 4 years old. And I remember, when all this was going on, you were waiting. My brother, sister, and I would wait in the bedroom until we heard the door slam because we knew my dad was done and he was going to take off for who knows how long. But once that door slammed, we were all like, whew. And that's so sad. But that happens all the time.
Yes.
All the time.
Yes.
And it's so sad. So when I see that, like, you can't stop me. If I see that happening, even in a story, I saw a mom one time just pick her child up by the hair in the store. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, my goodness, Lord knows I did not keep my mouth shut for 1 second. I drew as much attention to that woman as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But,
you know what amazes me about all of this is how the brain works. You know, what triggers them to the point where they think they can do this in public, you know, to children, and they think it's okay to do it at home. And, you know, and nowadays, if you see that out in public, somebody's going to step up and say something, you know, or do something, or have them arrested. Because more than likely, if they catch that on film, you know what, they're going to jail, you know.
Yep.
So times have changed. But it's so amazing how the brain works like that, where they think it's okay. I don't understand that, you know. I just don't get it, you know. So apparently they even themselves might even have brain damage, you know, the way I look at it.
Yeah.
Something might have happened to them. You know, so it's a domino effect, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, John, now what you're saying there, my so-called family, and I had my everything tested. They weren't my people. I'm glad they weren't my people, okay? Ancestry. My daughter got it from me, and I did it. And, you spit into a vial. It's no big deal. You spit into this vial, and you send it out. And just by your spit, they can tell who and what you are, okay? So my grandmother had told me on my so-called father's side one day when I was 14 years old, she said, you're not one of us. And I remember feeling crushed because I already felt like I didn't belong to anyone, you know what I'm saying? But this grandmother treated me fairly, and I respected her for that. She didn't, you know, treat the others any different than me. So when that came from her, that was hint number one. She says, you have green eyes. We all have blue eyes. A couple of us have brown eyes, but you have green eyes. And your nose is different. You know, and she's pointing out all the things to me that are different about me. And I thought, geez, you know. So later on, when my mother passed away, she was almost 10 years older than my stepfather, he told me the truth, that my mother had gotten raped, and out I popped. And she pushed me off as being a part of the family. And it worked. It worked. Until my grandmother took a good look at me in the daylight. Okay? I was 14 years old by that time. So I was probably changing in looks and all this other stuff. So anyway, the point is, when children feel, when they feel like they're different, and then they've been seen all kinds of abuse, you're already different, and it does affect your brain. It can actually go as far, now I read this recently, as changing your DNA. Now, I want to see more studies on that. But I saw it. So I don't know. I mean, trauma can cause lasting change in areas of the brain. That's what it says here. That deals with stress. It affects the precortex of the brain and other parts. And then that's just what it does.
It doesn't damage DNA. DNA is, a very base level identifier for each of us as individuals. But what it does affect in us is the growth of the gray matter, basically, the electrical impulses that go back and forth from all the pathways. Some parts of our brain, when we're traumatized, kind of shrink, and some parts of our brain get bigger. And the point is that they are out of sorts, and our brain continues to develop until we're 25. So whatever happens before that time, that's affecting your brain development. It's development, it's not DNA. But and it can be overcome because pretty much all of us that have, childhood trauma also experience, this problem. We call it PTSD. It has a lot of variations on it, but a lot of symptoms, right? But these symptoms can be overcome, and the trick is to reteach your brain. That's pretty much what you do. You teach certain parts of your brain how to talk, not to the part they're talking to now, that's the damaged part, but to go over to the more healthy part. And thank God we have very small percentage of our brain that's used as humans. So there is a lot of capacity, but it has to be almost cognizant. You have to do it consciously. And guided, hopefully. So that's
a very good point, Bill.
Yeah.
Very good point.
It doesn't
and how do you do
DNA,
that?
Though.
You're correct on that. Definitely does not. But, talking about what you were just talking about, is how do you do that? Think about, the possibilities that are involved with that and trying to get to that, that level. I mean, wow. Very deep.
Okay,
hold on,
John. I have a 770 area code here.
Okay.
Who am I speaking to?
I'll go in.
Is this Carol Levine?
Yes,
770? Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. We're talking about the areas of the brain that are affected. I don't know if you've been listening in or not, and so forth, how children suffer horribly. From watching their parents, almost kill each other, and how it affects them emotionally, psychologically, physically, mentally, and everything else that goes along with it. I have a lot of studies that I study from, so we were speaking from what I had gotten from the, Children's Expo Nation Institute of Justice, that's what it was. So, but welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yes, I was listening to some, very interesting.
Well, it's something a lot of us have lived, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so what I do a lot of times, if I'm bored, I go to the computer and I look things up. And in that way, I have it in my library. I have all kinds of stuff that I can use. And also, too, I did work at Greystone Psychiatric. I don't have my PhD, honey. No, I don't, although you do. but anyway, I did learn an awful lot. I worked with the psychiatrist, and that's where I learned so much. State job. But anyway, you are from Alpharetta, Georgia. You're a domestic violence survivor. and this is what we're speaking about too, we're speaking about children also too, about the parents. You're a coach and an author. And it says here, she's an expert in the area of mental health. And that's what I like to get into. My abuse was domestic abuse by your husband, well, Deborah too, and myself. I had two of them like that. Oh, my God, she explained, who committed suicide after being diagnosed with depression and schizophrenia. And I worked a lot with that. She goes on, I started my healing journey a couple of years after my husband's death. I started writing my book entitled An Amazing Mind, and I do like that title. I saw it earlier. I like that title. Mm-hmm. So, and and now you're at peace, and I hope that's in a good way. She's at peace, all right. I said, now she's at peace. I assist others by coaching and mentoring. Currently, I'm a mindset coach, and I have a PhD in mental health care. Okay. Are you in your car?
Can you hear me?
Now I can. Are you
okay.
Driving? I don't know what you're doing.
I'm mobile.
I don't know what you're doing.
No, I'm mobile.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, can you, we have time left. We've been talking a lot about, the mental health issues and also to the the physical issues. A lot of times kids who, and you know this, but a lot of times when children see too much violence, they have so many, stomach problems. They can have heart problems, all different kinds of ailments, because they develop it from watching, and they're such stressed out kids, and they develop one thing after another. I certainly did, and now if I did, then there's many who do. So it affects you so different ways. It affects your brain. It affects you physically, mentally, socially. Your social skills many times are off. A lot of times children become, very, very introverted, or the total opposite, as becoming aggressive. And those are the kids you see out on the street a lot of times, the aggressive ones. So we were talking about what we see in the home. And, it's too bad because, a lot of times when kids get into trouble, they end up in juvie. I used to work there too. And the point is that if you could look into their homes, if people could see more into their homes, then they'd have a better picture of the child and why they're acting that way, okay?
Right.
So we were talking about a whole bunch of things. So now that you're here, you can tell us your story. That'd be good if you want to.
Well, you've really said a lot. The ministry at the time was An Amazing Mind is the name of the book. But, the ministry is Miracle Mind Global now, So, I was led to change the name of the ministry, and, which is global all over the world, and having ambassadors to represent, because as you know, my adamant position about getting the message out there, because we don't talk about this. And, talk about the youth and the children, because they are caught in the middle right now, and they are stuck. And so we have to literally pay attention, because parents aren't paying attention. They're so concerned and really trying to survive pretty much among themselves with their family. So the kids are they feel left out. And I've had many parents to reach out recently wanting help for their children, and they're just like, zombies, actually. They really are. And we know we have the social media outlet, because the parents feel like, okay, well, I'm depressed. I'm going through, and I don't have time to spend with my child. So that's their only outlet. That's their best friend. But we've got to change the, we've got to change things. And it starts actually in the home, we know. But the parents right now, I'm realizing and seeing they need help. So, again, getting to my story, as you know, and losing my husband to suicide from not talking about it in the family and sweeping it under the rug is what I found out after he passed, because men don't talk. So there are quite a few things there. This is threefold. Again, men not talking, being the head of the household, and having platforms such as this. But then again, at the end of the day, what's the solution? And
right.
Reaching out to the children, because they can't lead if they are not – you know, healed. And sweeping it under the rug generation after generation is like a snowball effect. It's not going to help. And you can't heal if you don't talk about it.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, it goes back to generation. You just said it right there. Generation after generation after generation. Part of my family were city people. They were all born in New York, and some at the turn of the 1900s they were born. And then the other part of the family came from Iowa. Now, the ones that came from Iowa, they thought nothing of strapping their children, you know, taking their belt off and hitting them, okay? When, you know, and they would be so angry with them because they had to work on the farm, all right? They had farms. And if they didn't do what they were told to do, and if they didn't do enough of what they were told to do, they'd get a beating out, you know, and they thought that was okay, all right? I don't believe that it's ever, I don't think it's ever okay, you know, to beat your child. And that was on... And that was on Facebook the other night. It was talking about spanking. I've read articles since then. The minute I saw that, I started reading things. And, you know, how to deal with the two-year-olds, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. Then also, too, you know, the older the child becomes. And I always say that when a child can reason, And they're a little bit even older than that. You sit that child down. And this is what I wrote on Facebook, too. You sit that child down, and you talk to them, and you say, I'm not happy with you right now, and this is why. How many times do parents say to their kids, because I said so, that's not good enough? Children are smart. They have a good brain most of the time, depending on what's happening in their environment. But they can reason. And children need to know why the parent is so upset with them. And then, you know, show them different ways of handling the solution. They have to learn, too, how to be a parent, how to parent in the right way so that their children understand why they're being yelled at and why it's wrong what they did. And then you send them 5 minutes maybe to time out. And I was talking about, don't send them to their bedroom. They have their TVs, they have their phones, they have all this other stuff. No, have them go sit in the laundry room or something for 5 minutes where there's not going to be any distraction. And so they can think. Yeah, it's or in the corner facing the wall. I don't care. You know. And yeah. And then that way they have time to think about what was said between parent and child. So they wanted to know, actually, what was the right age to start hitting your child. What?
Oh, what?
Right.
Now, that's what
that's
got me going.
Oh,
yes,
my.
And I didn't like that. And I started pulling my paperwork out and other things, books that I have, and going online, and, you know, it's what I found. So it's never appropriate to beat your child.
Yeah.
You know, it said the only other thing was that if a child is going to, and they spoke about yelling, too, by the way, yelling can have a very detrimental effect.
That's true.
If a kid is always, yes, if a child is being yelled at all the time, okay, then that, too, is, you know, very bad. But if a child is about to run out in the street, yeah.
Well,
I'm having trouble hearing.
Can you hear me okay?
I'm having trouble hearing. There's too much buzzing going on or something. But let me finish that sentence.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Let me finish the sentence. If a child, and this is what I read last night, if a child is going to run out into the street, of course it's okay to scream and yell, get back here, but tell them why. You're going to get hurt. My daughter did that once. I said, you're going to turn into tomato soup. That's what I told her. And she understood that. And what kid doesn't like grilled cheese sandwiches and tomato soup, right? So, you know, so... Mm-hmm. You know, explain more, have conversations more with your children, give them analogies, you're going to be a smashed tomato. You're going to turn into tomato soup. That's why it's okay then to scream and yell at them because you're trying to get their attention.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead.
Right. Yeah, do you mind if I ask Dr. Lena Clark a couple questions? Because
sure,
I have to leave a few minutes. And
okay.
I hate to break that up. But hi, Doc.
Go ahead.
My name's John Anderson. How are you?
Yes, I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. I'm doing fine. I just wanted to ask you a few questions. You know, I'm a host here for NASCA, and I also have my own organization, too, okay? So I'm always interested in subjects like this because it does relate a lot in the things that I do because
mm-hmm.
I see a lot of this involved with child sex abuse, okay?
You know,
a significant amount of domestic violence, you know? So I'm just wondering, how many cases do you run into that you know of when you see that combination versus just domestic violence? In other words, are there children involved that are also sexually abused in that situation,
mm-hmm.
okay? And the other thing, too, is that that's just my question for you, okay? And my comment,
uh-huh.
though, was that I do love an amazing mind because the mind is amazing, okay?
Yeah,
and it's
absolutely.
Such a beautiful thing. It really is, you know. And I did have some questions about when, you know, some of the pain that you might have went through. And then going
uh-huh.
into this journey, to this journey of love, you know, that you're describing, I would love to kind of put all that into one if you could, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you so much for that. You know, I'll start with the children, like you mentioned, as far as the I find that the case because, you know, when I get the calls from the parents and they say, okay, well, this child won't listen to me, normally, again, there's something that's embedded within that child that they haven't shared with their parent, and that's happening within the home. And
right.
and so there's a combination of things, and my heart really goes out to them because in some cases the parent may be one of the parents may have custody, and they're separated
right.
or divorced, and then the parents are warring against each other, and the child's in the middle, and
mm-hmm.
so they just shut down, basically is what they do.
Yeah.
And they've already been traumatized. Mm-hmm.
And that leaves the children vulnerable, doesn't it?
Yes, of course. It leaves them vulnerable, and that's why they, you know, go out and they, you know, are subject to join gangs and organizations where they feel
right.
like they're loved, and someone that's going to understand
mm-hmm.
them. Because all they want is to be loved and to be understood.
Yeah, and you can also include almost sex trafficking in that also, you know.
Absolutely.
Which probably
mm-hmm.
comes into play, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, the sex trafficking, absolutely, because, see, they know. I mean, that's why they go out and recruit, and they are undercover in so many different ways. And so they know what's going on. They know how it works in the household. So, of course, it's like, you know, we can give you what you're not getting at home. But the parents are so focused on the problem and themselves,
right.
they're not focusing on the child.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
we have
it's probably drug,
so
and it's probably drug abuse. You know, it's probably drug abuse in the household, or alcohol, heavy, or you know, things of that nature too. I find that to be a very high percentage. You know, in
right.
cases of that, you know, almost 90. You know, percent. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of times, again, there's alcohol, drug abuse, you know, so much. But
mm-hmm.
until you actually start working with them, you can't really get to the surface and find out,
right.
You know, what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's a process. They're not going to, yeah, they're in denial in most cases. There they are.
And, again, that's almost like just going back into, like, educating them. You know, like Bill was
uh-huh.
talking about retraining the brain. You know, and Carol
right.
was saying, you know, about the whole situation. If you look at the whole picture of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's definitely that avenue, you know, for domestic violence. I mean, you know, absolutely, you know.
It is, you know, basically reprogramming the brain from so many different perspectives is what it's going to take in this
mm-hmm.
day and time is what I'm seeing. You know, we are in the middle of a shift here, and people just don't know from the unknown and knowing what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
well,
that's
a big
that.
Part of the problem, too. Yeah, yeah. See,
yeah, thank you for
such
answering
an uncertain,
that.
Yeah. You're welcome. Yeah. Did I answer
that
your question?
That was very good.
Yeah, you did. You absolutely did. Thank you so much for that. I mean, that's a significant information I think that anybody can use. You know, it all comes down to educating people and and hopefully opening doors for people where they feel more comfortable about knowing what's going on first before any actions are done, so they can understand a little bit, you know, about it.
Exactly. Right, and talk about it, because that was the reason why, you know, the other part of your question, why I decided to do what I did in the book, An Amazing Mind, because you stated we all have amazing minds. But it's a matter, everything starts with the mind. And so, you know, at my husband's repast, the question came up from his mother was, didn't you know? And so my question to her was, didn't I know what? But the family knew. And so I took upon myself to do research. I said, no, we have two children, two seeds. So the buck stops here. I don't want this to continue to go on, because one day they may want to have children, you know, get married and have children. So they need to know the truth. And, if, you know, like the saying goes, once you know better, we are to do better. And in a lot of cases, that doesn't happen. But we do have an obligation to educate our children, because they have a voice. They have a voice, and it's important that we listen.
And you know what, too, speaking about that voice, I'm going to tell you what, these days have changed. You know, nowadays, it is almost acceptable to have conversations with your children about this situation now. And you know what? They are so smart now that they understand a lot more than we did back in the 70s and, you know, stuff like that. It's a whole new environment. And you know what? You know why? It's because we're doing it. We're making it happen, you know?
Yeah.
We had to make it happen, because they don't give anything. You understand? You have to take it. You have to get it, you know? That's the only way that we can conquer this nasty situation, you know. You know, but it's everybody working together, you know, as a team, and really putting people. I don't believe it's always putting people in the right situations. Okay, you know, you can't offer advice to someone that you might not have experience in. Because it could affect that person dramatically, okay? But
absolutely.
If you know somebody, you know, that specializes in that area, and, you know, they're all specialists for a lot of different things out here. We know this. Is that it's better to do your homework ahead of time instead of just coming right out and saying, hey, you know, do this or do that, you know? So I think that's where we come in, because we're that middle guy, you know? We were the ones that experienced between, you know, nothing against doctors, of course, but, you know, victims and the people that are really what I call warriors and experienced survivors, okay, that are actually making differences and helping people in life, it's crucial that we give them the correct information the first time, because you could trigger them people bad, you know, and that's what this is all about. You have to be, it's very sensitive. Everything is sensitive. It doesn't matter what kind of abuse it is, you know, it's all, you know, trauma, okay?
Yeah, and
you have to look at it that way. So, I really appreciate you answering that. And listen, I'm going to have to go. I'm sorry to cut out early, but tonight's my birthday, and I'm going to go have
It's his birthday.
Okay?
Yes, it is.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah.
And I sang
Thank
to him.
So
yes,
much.
I did.
Yeah, you did a very good job. You did an excellent job.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when is your birthday?
You,
I'll play a song for you on my guitar for your birthday. How about that?
Well, there you go. You and my son should get together. He plays the guitar, too.
Yeah, I know.
You told me.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank y'all for having me tonight, okay? I'm going to cut out a little bit if you don't mind.
All right.
And look,
yes,
I have one thing to say, is that, number one, don't touch our kids. Secondly, if you see something, say something, okay?
Say something.
Say something. Look, if you need help coming forward, anybody that's listening out there, we are here for you, okay? It's time.
Right.
You know, don't wait any longer, because I'm telling you that your life will change to such a wonderful world that you have no idea, you know, how it can be unless you take that first step. You know, and again, you know, let me just give them the call-in number. It's area code 646-595-2118. And you can also go into the NASCA website. You can remain anonymous, okay? So please, you know, and one thing before I go to is that, you know, please donate to NASCA, okay? You know, you have to realize that we put a tremendous amount of effort into, you know, making this world a better place for your children, okay? Without that, I mean, that's our most precious commodity in this world. You know, things have changed, and we need to make sure that it stays on this track. Without that, you know, we need, you know, some funding. I mean, you know, it doesn't hurt, you know, to kick anything in helps. It helps tremendously. Yeah. So I just want to thank anybody that has. And if you do decide to, thank you very much for doing that. Okay? And y'all have a wonderful night, by the way.
And John,
okay, you too. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
And also, check us out, Miracle Mind Global on social media, Facebook, Instagram.
Okay.
An Amazing Mind is on Amazon as well.
Right, okay. Yeah, also you can look me up. I'm the vice president of SCSA, okay? You have to pull in www.scsaorg.org, and you can see my story there. And I work in a different way with them, okay? I'm more after justice than anything with that, along with media and different things, you know. So I kind of handle, you know, two different ways with both these groups that I love so much, you know. And I don't want to leave that. I just want to be here because I love both sides. And, you know, when people like you come on to the show, it's wonderful, you know. It actually just opens up so many doors for people out there that you have no idea. You know, all we need is, you know, for somebody to listen to the show. And it could change your life forever. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, y'all have a very good night. And thank y'all.
Okay, go enjoy your birthday.
I am. Bye-bye.
Yes. Good night.
Bye. Bye.
Okay. So, anyway, yes, we were speaking about domestic violence and how it affects children. We sort of like, you know, go off the different areas here. But all the areas are important, okay? Maybe we need 2 hours for a show like this. Because every area that we speak about, you know, needs we need to explain things so that people out there who are listening in can learn things. And so, you know, the complex PTSD that someone was asking me about today, they had a life where they were continuously abused physically, mentally, emotionally, sexually, every way. And a lot of us are like that. And quite frankly, they don't have PTSD, they have complex. So I was explaining what that meant by the complex, and that means, of course, you know, many, many types of behavior and many times done. And there's just so much out there, and doctor, quite frankly, now with the COVID, everything has gotten so much worse. And I've already gone over, you know, the ER visits and the bleeding of the brain, that's what they're seeing now. I've gone over so many things, you know, before you got on. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about what you do? If someone comes to you, you can't talk about a personal case, but what do you do for them? Someone who needs help. Is she there? I don't think she's there.
No, it looks like she dropped.
She dropped.
The
yep, she did.
Dropped
it
off
just,
the show.
It just
yeah.
came up. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell you what. It was so noisy. I couldn't hear half of what she was saying a lot of times. So it's hard.
It's,
you know,
she's
if the person
car,
has the window
so,
down. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, okay, so with the ACE study, again, I want to get back to that because that's so important.
Yes.
I do speak to people. Average is 3.5 or 4, but anything over that is still, and that's considered still high, by the way, which that surprised me. I didn't think it would be, but 3.5 to 4 is considered high. And the ACE covers neglect, household dysfunction, physical or mental illness issues, incarceration, and that's why I got a 9 out of 10 when we had gone to jail. They should have, but they didn't. Okay, physical, emotional, sexual, and neglect that we talk about all the time. And supposedly, going through this, according to the ACE study, the lifespan shortens. Like, we've been abused, okay, all of us on this show here. And so supposedly, our life very much could have be shortened because of that. Now, it didn't mean by suicide, although a lot of people do commit suicide. It didn't go into any detail. That was a blanket statement. So, you know, it isn't anything to mess with. If you're out there and you have been abused, for God's sake, you have issues. There's no way that you can go through physical, mental, emotional types and sexual or neglect and not have issues. You have issues with even far less than that. And life is not too long, okay? Especially with the world that we live in today. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, next week, or next month. I'm not going to get political here, though you know I love to, but I won't. I won't. But unfortunately, I saw that coming, people coming from nation to nation a while back, because I watch the news all the time. I do a lot of reading. But anyway, the point is, you know, for the rest of our lives, I'm going to put it that way. If you have, you know, something that's bothering you, if you have some kind of problem, some kind of hang-up, you know, something that is keeping you from growing on your healing journey, and you've never been to a therapist or a psychiatrist or a counselor, for God's sake, get help, you know.
Yes.
And there are other ways.
And, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, it was told to me the first time that, you know, they started recognizing I was having the issues, and you know, people were like, are you okay? Like, if you just being put in different situations, they would see how I would react, which wasn't the normal me. It was just some reaction because of everything I had gone through. And they were like, well, you need to go see somebody. I was like, what? Oh, my gosh. And they said, well, did they put it to me this way? You have a heart problem, which I do. And they said, well, mm-hmm. when you go to the doctor and you have a heart problem, you don't have a problem if they say, hey, take this pill, go see the doctor, do you? And I was like, no. And they said, well, it's the same thing with your brain, with your mental health just as much. So if you're willing to go to the doctor for your physical health does involve your brain. And when I started looking at it that way, I started not feeling so much shame. Because I was feeling shame. I was feeling shame, like, oh, my gosh, I have to go to a shrink. You know,
you feel embarrassed or something, right?
Yeah. And I was like, what? Are you mm-hmm. kidding me? No. I'm good. When in all reality, I wasn't. And going to see the brain doctor, psychologist, psychiatrist, it does help. And there is no mm-hmm. shame in it. And, in fact, you kind of feel more proud when you go there, because you feel that release, that comfort finally, that, oh, it's not just me. I'm not going crazy. This is just a reaction to what I have been through in my life and what my body is reacting to it. And that's,
well,
you
said it right
a lot
there,
of people,
Deborah.
Don't understand that.
Yeah, let me stop you before I lose my thought here, because you said it right there. A lot of people are afraid that, you know, maybe they are a little crazy. Because, you see, you have the other part of your brain that says, well, why would you take abuse? What's wrong with you? Okay. A lot of times women stay in an abusive situation because they can't financially get out of it. That can be if they have children. So they stay there, yeah. And they take the abuse time after time after time after time. And what that does do is it wears down their body. According to this here from the ACE study, it says, with a score of 4 or more, risk of disease, social and emotional problems, chronic pulmonary lung disease increases. I'm surprised to see that one. And that's by 39%. Hepatitis, 24%. Depression.
Wow.
I don't understand the hepatitis one at 24%. I don't understand. No, that's kind of weird. But that's what was written. I wrote it. And it says depression, 460%. Depression, 460%. Okay.
Yep.
Suicide,
I believe that.
1,220%. That's 6/20. In other words, 6 out of 20 people. 6 out of 20 people.
So, and, you know, I was part of that statistic. I mean, I was very suicidal for a couple times. I mean, I would get into it, be fine for a while, and then I would get suicidal. And thank goodness I haven't had that for quite a while now, but because I am taking care of myself and my mental health and talking when I need to talk. But, yeah, I could have been that statistic. Then that's so sad. I'm glad I'm not.
Yeah. Well, I just found that shocking, to be honest with you. I found it shocking. So you see, but what happens, though, I suppose, like with my first husband, he was horrifically abusive. Now, before Uncle Sam got a hold of him, this is during the Vietnam time, I told you, we had a blast. You know, I always tease. He had the Harley, he had the Cadillac, he had an Indian. That's a bike also. And you know, we would go into the city, we'd shoot pool. He'd take me to Sardi's. That's where the movie stars would go. It was really cool. Okay, and all kinds of stuff. We had a wonderful, wonderful time, and we were together almost every single day. I don't know how he went to work. We never slept. He never slept. I'd go home and I'd sleep. He'd have to go to work. But he was there the next day, okay? So that was for about 10 months maybe before Uncle Sam really said, okay, buddy, second notice, you don't show up for your physical in Newark, you're going to jail. You know, you're going to be considered a person that's, you know, trying to get away, like those that ran over to Canada. So anyway, he went. And he was gone, and when he came back, he was not the man that I married, and he did not see any action. He went to Korea, Busan, to be exact, that's south. So it's not as if he, you know, saw terrible things, and he admits that he didn't see terrible things. So I can't use that as an excuse. The truth of the matter is I didn't know him well enough. As much as we were together, it's easy for 9 or 10 months to act like a perfect gentleman or a perfect lady. But you live with the person, and all of a sudden the real monster, if that's what they are, comes out. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So my mother had to call the cops on him. I was pregnant with my daughter, and he pushed me down, I told you, some steps. I'm pregnant with my daughter. I was 5 months along. And you know, I was so blown away, that this guy that had been with for almost a year before we got married, turned out to be like that. It was shocking.
Yeah.
And it blew my mind. It blew my mind because I'd gone through all the abuses we've spoken about so many times on this show. I thought he was my answer, see? I thought he was my answer.
Exactly. Uh-huh.
And girls were doing that back then. Yeah. Girls were doing that back then.
Well, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand. Like you said, he didn't show you the monster. He was trying to impress you. And I did the same thing with my first husband. He was my answer. He was, oh my goodness, he was everything. He had long hair. He was in a band. He drove a motorcycle. Everything that would piss my mother off, basically. and he really was the answer at the time. And until we were living together, and then the abuse started. Now he was abusing me physically when I was pregnant with my first child. And unfortunately, God bless the baby soul, I lost the baby at 5 months old. Not 5 months old, 5 months pregnant. And I was five months pregnant. So when I was pregnant with my second child, which is Amanda, my firstborn, I was 5 months pregnant, and he punched me directly in the stomach as hard as he could. And yep. Man,
I got that one.
You know
too.
What? Instead of calling the police, I called his mother because that was the only person I could talk to. And she washed it away. Okay, just stay away from him for now. He'll cool off. He'll do this. What? Now in hindsight, I go, what? That's, what kind of lesson did she teach him? But ridiculous. And the other thing I wanted to hit on as well, because I know we discussed that the majority of all this abuse, whether it's from a spouse or from a parent or all this, the majority does come from somebody who is having substance abuse problems, whether it be alcohol or drugs. But there's also those cases, and I want people to understand that there doesn't have to be any type of substance abuse in the home for domestic violence to still occur.
No, it doesn't.
It can't.
A lot of
yeah,
times
it, does
it is,
not have to.
But it doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's,
you know,
that's
I did speak with somebody, and the reason I point this out, I was just recently speaking with somebody, and we were discussing what I do with NASCA, and she said, but there was, my parents didn't do drugs. My parents didn't drink alcohol. In fact, they were quite the opposite. They didn't do anything. You know, they were very clean. And, but she still suffered from that. And so she was kind of going, well, maybe it's just me. And no, domestic violence is domestic violence. So like, that's the reason I wanted to point that out, because it doesn't necessarily, majority, like you said, majority of the time, that is the case, but not always.
No. There's a lot of people who are mentally ill out there, and, you know, they're volatile people. Look, I told you the other night, I went from job to job to job because I needed to make money, because I didn't know where Paul was, all right? I couldn't even get any child support off of him. So whenever I saw a job, and sometimes I liked those jobs that I left, but I needed to make money. I had
right.
to take an apartment and two kids. So, but anyway, that's all right. I learned a lot. Every place I went, I don't care. And they sent me to school, which I hated, but I had to go. All right.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, the point is, you know, with the mental illness, you don't have to be an alcoholic or a drug addict. If you're mentally ill, you're mentally ill. Yes, people many times will drink and drug to mask the feelings that they're going through. That's true. Okay. Because they're not happy with themselves, they're off balance and all this other stuff, and instead of going to a psychiatrist and getting the help, or unfortunately sometimes going inpatient, people sometimes have to do that, you know, and getting help that way, the right proper medication, and that's not always the answer. There's some things that can't be healed. All right, that's just the way it is. They can work with bipolar, they can work with schizophrenic, but there's other things that they can't work with. I mean, they can give you things for the symptoms, but it doesn't change your brain.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be a drug addict or an alcoholic to be volatile. Okay.
Exactly.
Borderline personality disorder, if you have that, that's the worst of the mental illnesses. And Dr. Lena and I could talk a lot about that. But, you know, the point is, I've worked with it. I saw it. Oof. But anyway, the point is, no, you don't always have to be an alcoholic or a drug addict. You don't. Mm-hmm. Now, Bill, you've been very quiet because we've been talking an awful lot. So,
I know.
Well, that's all right. It makes it easier for you.
Yeah, it sure does.
Bill's just
so happy with us right now.
Well, I was going to say, we talked about whether there was DNA damage and so forth, brain damage. We call it what we call brain damage. And I said, no, there
isn't.
That's
weird.
And that's and that's why. Well, it's still developed. It's brain matter that develops in the wrong way. Okay, so because it is malleable, it can be retrained. It's a matter of exercise, really. We've been exercising our brain in a non-functioning way, really, in a not healthy way, for a long time. By the time we get to recovery, now we got to reteach ourselves how to think. and how to feel,
yeah,
and how to have relationships, and how to go get a job, and, you know, how to manage money.
I know.
This is all reteaching. It's all reteaching. Mm-hmm. And and how to not to freak out,
mm-hmm,
you know, before you get those things, you know. A lot of us freak
right
out, you know, in the middle of the job, of the journey of trying to heal.
And just by just trying to be normal, okay,
what
they say that normal is. I don't think anyone's 100% normal. I don't care who you are, okay? But on the other hand, to be fit for society, to be a person that's functioning in society, to be a person that can, you know, grow and produce and do good things and so forth, or bad, if you choose, whatever. But the point is this.
Right.
When we've been so abused, all right, and I don't have to tell anyone about this on the panel, but when a person has been very abused, all the things that come easy to a lot of people, you know, just normal functioning, a lot of times it can be much harder for a person who has been abused. Yes, you're right on that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong, and there's nothing, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's just recoverable, because our brains are huge muscles, and the electrical sockets and muscles. If we rearrange the electrical sockets and we get the muscles, you know, stronger, you know, we won't think the same way we used to. We'll start to change that and make it more healthy. So it can take years, but it is worth it. You know, that's what I'm saying is, you know, it's not something you can do overnight. You can't take a pill for it. You know,
nope.
You can't. Electric shock doesn't help it. It helps in other ways.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, but it doesn't help.
I have
help
friends that had electric shock. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people do, but this is not
they
part of this
it.
Process. This would be part of the mental health process rather than the than the child abuse. Yeah. But anyway, the point is there's stuff to do. It takes a while. It's worth the journey. That's what I would say, you know.
Yeah.
Get on that journey.
Yeah, people have to not be embarrassed to go to a shrink, because you know what I do when I find out people are embarrassed about that. When I worked at Greystone, Bill, a lot of the shrinks that I worked with, they had shrinks. When I found that out. I rolled all over the floor laughing. I have a lot of humor, so when I found that out, you know, it struck me funny. It never occurred to me, because you think that a psychiatrist, you know, has their head all together, so why would they have to go to a psychiatrist, you know? But
think of it this way too. Doctors still have to go see a doctor themselves for their health as well. So, you know, them having to deal with all these mental issues, they're also taking that on mentally as well. So a doctor has to see a doctor, a shrink has to see a shrink. It's just how it rolls.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. And it's not to be ashamed of. Remember, there's a reason why we are the way that we are. And a big portion of that reason is because of the way that we were brought up, the things that we saw, and the things that happened to us. Yes, there's a little part of that that's us. And you have to come in touch with that part, too.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to get off the show, because I just heard someone yell in my ear, 90 seconds.
She's so nice when she says it, too.
It's all right. We listen here. Yes, we had a very good show. I think we did too. And you know, we're easygoing here. I always tell people when I try to get them to come on the show, we're easygoing people, and we are. We're easy to talk to. We've been through it all, and you can't shock us. So come and join the conversation. That's all I have to say. Okay. So have a good weekend, you guys. All right. And I'll talk to you Monday. Yes, we have a good guest coming on Monday, and the third is taken care of too. I sent you an email. You should have gotten it. I will talk to you later. Love you guys. Okay, and God bless.
Okay, God bless.
God bless.
Good night.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was cool. You often got.
Radio.